You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 26th of March 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live today at RadioAlbion.com, because we do have with us Mr. Sleepyhead Geopolitical Analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. Good afternoon to you, sir. Did the alarm clock actually go off today then?
Well, I had to invest in another one. So now I have my phone and an alarm clock with a huge bell on it, because I can't keep my presence from the airwaves, you know, for another week. I don't want to torture people that way. So, you know, I have a lot of responsibility in that regard. So I'm here, and I deserve all the mockery you could throw at me for sleeping through this show.
That's all right. You're here today. You're here today, at least, and that's what matters. And it's really going to be a follow-on from last week where you weren't able to be here. We will talk a little bit about the economy in this episode. But really, we're going to look at the alternative viewpoint on the coronavirus. I've covered it quite a lot recently, and it's mainly just been my criticisms of it. But there have also been criticisms from experts, and we're going to look at some of those today. We're going to begin with a Swiss doctor and what he has to say about COVID-19. He says, according to the latest data of the Italian National Health Institute, ISS, the average age of the positively tested deceased in Italy is currently about 81 years. 10% of the deceased are over 90 years old. 90% of the deceased are over 70 years old. 80% of the deceased had suffered from two or more chronic diseases. 50% of the deceased had suffered from three or more chronic diseases. The chronic diseases include, in particular, cardiovascular problems, diabetes, respiratory problems, and cancer. Less than 1% of the deceased were healthy persons, i.e. persons without pre-existing chronic diseases. Only about 30% of the deceased are women. The Italian Institute of Health, moreover, distinguishes between those who died from the coronavirus and those who died with the coronavirus. In many cases, it is not yet clear whether the persons died from the virus or from their pre-existing chronic diseases or from a combination of both. Northern Italy has one of the oldest populations and the worst air quality in Europe, which has already led to an increased number of respiratory diseases and deaths in the past and is likely an additional risk factor in the current epidemic. South Korea, for instance, has experienced a much milder course than Italy and has already passed the peak of the epidemic. In South Korea, only about 70 deaths with a positive test result have been reported so far. As in Italy, those affected were mostly high-risk patients. The few dozen test-positive Swiss deaths so far were also high-risk patients with chronic diseases, an average age of more than 80 years, and a maximum age of 97 years, whose exact cause of death, i.e. from the virus or from their pre-existing diseases, is not yet known. Furthermore, according to a first Chinese study, the internationally used virus test kits may give a false positive result in some cases. In these cases, the persons may not have contracted the new coronavirus, but presumably one of the many existing human coronaviruses that are part of the annual and currently ongoing common cold and flu epidemics. So we've got two points there, really. We've got the point that it is really only affecting the old, and only about 1%, they say here, are younger and not actually with chronic health conditions. And I would say that there have been younger people that have been turning up with it, particularly in America, but that could be down to obesity, which is, of course, a precondition. It's another condition that they might have. And the other thing here is about these tests. And this would tie in with the tests in America not working. Apparently, China have stopped using the tests for some reason. So there's two points there really to talk about, Matt, I think. The age of the deceased and the tests. What do you make? What do you make of this report? Do you think this is what we should be listening to? Or I think we should be somewhere in the middle, to be honest. We should be open to everything. But what are your thoughts on this?
Well, as this has been going on, you know, thousands of people have died of influenza. Getting this virus is not a big deal if you're generally healthy. This lockdown over really what amounts to a relatively minor outbreak that's only affected a few countries. Most of Eastern Europe is almost totally unaffected. Most of the Middle East is unaffected. You know, most of China is unaffected. Central Asia is unaffected. India has, I think, 14 deaths. And they have a border with China, as does Kazakhstan, who has zero. This is a surreal in the sense that this is a massive lockdown and clampdown over something that, as far as, you know, these kind of illnesses go, like, just a simple the flu, is not a huge deal. I don't know how many people who are checking themselves into the hospital. I mean, there are people who are panicking. They have the sniffles and they're convinced that they have this. You know, the coronavirus, you know, that strand is in a lot of people's blood. It's very, very common. So less than 1% of Wuhan's population was infected. 3% of that 1% died. I mean, that's not exactly the profile of a new killer disease, and certainly nothing that you would need extreme quarantines to beat. And the problem with talking to actually professional virologists here is that these guys are in their heyday. They're the most powerful people in the country. I mean, they're more than likely to exaggerate this for the sake of their own benefit. But when you see a headline that says India has seen 10 die, entire country under martial law, you have to laugh. And this is absolutely surreal. Now, how many of these people who are checking themselves into the hospital are simply panicking? How many of these thought after Chernobyl in Ukraine, a massive flood of psychosomatic illnesses? It seems overwhelmingly that this targets the very old and those who are already very sick. And so in that case, you don't even know if the virus itself is what killed them. And I still can't believe this. This is absolutely unbelievable, the overreaction, given the lack of any kind of reaction. You know, there was a state of emergency for SARS too. I didn't even notice it. So this whole thing is blowing my mind. And there's got to be another agenda behind it. There has to be.
I think with the tests, I learned today that where it's a respiratory illness, it really goes for the lungs. And these testing kits are going to the back of the nose in the sinuses. And it doesn't always go there. So they can test people and it will say that they don't have it. Then they can test them again and it will say that they do have it. And then they can test them again and it will say that they don't have it. So these tests are really not that accurate. And I read the other day, as I say, that China had actually stopped testing people. And this may be the reason why. So we're hearing, oh, we've got to have these tests, but these tests, they're not accurate. Well, you mentioned there that, there may be some kind of a scheme behind this, and that is the title of the next piece, COVID-19, a US scheme for greater consolidation of wealth and power. Michael Hudson explained that lockdowns, social distancing, mass layoffs, crashing markets, and corporate bailouts threaten a global depression, adding, history shows it doesn't have to be this way. Hudson's solution is a debt jubilee. Restore balance by state cleaning. When debts grow too large to be paid without reducing debtors to poverty, the way to hold society together and restore the balance is simply to cancel the bad debts. Extraordinary times call for extraordinary actions, ones taken by America's oligarchy benefit privileged interests exclusively at the expense of most others. this time is highly likely to be no different than earlier in the US. Hard times are likely to get much harder for ordinary Americans, while favored interests benefit greatly from what is going on. This is the problem, isn't it? With, you know, heading into this recession, it's likely to cause more deaths than the epidemic was going to cause. And people's businesses and their livelihoods are all going to be ruined. And what he's calling for here, this debt jubilee, I was talking about this last week. This is the Christian response, is to have a debt jubilee. It's supposed to happen every 7 years. You're supposed to zero all the debts. And then you don't get into this sort of a mess where everybody has to just make that extra 1% each year because we're all living just on that 1% of GDP. But this is actually coming from the left, Matt, isn't it? This is global research that produced this. What are your thoughts on what he is saying here about debts and what they're trying to achieve with it?
Well, Global Research is one of my favorite websites. They're kind of, you know, they're anti-globalist, and they have certain, you know, leftists and also right-wing. They publish Paul Craig Roberts and people like that. So I love them. And, you know, of course, I've been preaching, you know, debt forgiveness for a very long time. This is something that monarchies were able to do. Tsar Nicholas II completely canceled the debts, the so-called redemption payments that peasants had to pay when serfdom was removed in 1861. You know, they had to pay off that debt to the state, and he simply canceled it. And the world didn't end. And if you could buy up the debts of these, you know, massive conglomerates and corporations, you certainly can for Americans. What that would do, or anyone, the massive stimulus for the economy would be tremendous. But it's my opinion, and every day it's getting more and more clear, that this overreaction is about introducing the notion of a real depression, which I've been talking about for a long time, and people like Robert's been talking about it for a long time. Now you could talk about a depression and blame the virus for it. Several trillion dollars have already been pumped into the stock market, attempts to buttress the currency, rates have been reduced to almost zero. Anything bad that happens now, any destruction, all the layoffs, all this, you know, restructuring, all of this now can be blamed on, you know, a strand of DNA, on this virus, and not on the oligarchy. So this is a godsend to them. And I think really that's what this overreaction is all about. For the first time, you're seeing the word depression in the financial press. That word was banned informally. Now you're seeing it all the time, and they're calling it the COVID depression, or the coronavirus depression. So they're already associating those terms. I think that's really what's going on here.
So it's certainly been very convenient for the banks. Well, does the coronavirus pandemic serve a global agenda? There is a lot of controversy about the number of deaths that can really be ascribed to the epidemic. Testing is not very reliable and suffers many biases. According to Dr. Wolfgang Wodarg, who had chaired the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe Health Committee that called an emergency debate on the influence of the pharmaceutical industry in the declaration of the H1N1 flu pandemic by the WHO in 2009, the tests are currently not measuring the incidence of coronavirus diseases, but the activity of the specialists searching for them. Many experts also disagree on the mortality rate of COVID-19. While the WHO gives estimates as high as 3.4%, renowned epidemiologists such as John Ioannidis consider the risk is probably much lower, perhaps 0.125%, for which there are no reasons to take such draconian measures. The current power struggle in France about coronavirus strategies between health officials and the country's leading expert is truly eye-opening. Professor Didier Raoul, who is one of the world's top five scientists on communicable diseases and leads the High-Tech Research Centre on Infectious Diseases, the IHU, Méditerranée Marseille, argued that the approach of mass quarantine is both inefficient and outdated, and that large-scale testing and treatment of suspected cases achieves far better results. Early on, Dr. Raoult suggested the use of chloroquine or plaquenil, a well-known, simple and inexpensive drug that has shown efficacy with previous coronaviruses such as SARS. By mid-February, clinical trials at his institute and in China already confirmed that the drug could reduce the viral load and bring spectacular improvement. The Chinese scientists published their first trials on more than 100 patients and announced that the Chinese National Health Commission would recommend chloroquine in their new guidelines to treat COVID-19. Again, there's two things here. I think what he's saying there about it could just be 0.125% is because there could be so many other people that are actually infected and they haven't got the full-blown disease. And all we know are the people that are going into the hospital and then saying, well, 3% of the people that we've tested that went into hospital, they've died. But there are a lot of people that haven't actually been in hospital. And this second point here that he's making about this this antiviral drug, chloroquine, I don't understand why they're not using that, because if a drug has been tested and it can be used for one purpose, then it can be used for an off-label purpose. That's the point of having doctors. They can say, well, you can try this drug because we know that that's safe for people to use, or we know what the side effects of it are going to be. So you can try this. I mean, that's how they came out with Viagra, which was supposed to be something to do with the blood and with the heart, and they discovered that it had this other effect. And then the off-label usage was for impotence, but they were still able to use it. So there's nothing stopping them using chloroquine. So they took two points here, Matt, the death toll, and also this drug chloroquine that he's bringing up here. Why aren't they doing that?
I know that in certain states, I know California is one, that off-label use of that is not legal. Now, I'm not sure how technical this gets. I'm in no position to really talk about it. Off-label uses are done all the time, you know, antidepressants and stuff like that, who have all kinds of, you know, blood pressure applications and stuff like that. But, you know, this notion that people – or they could just be carriers and not know it. I mean, this is just to frighten people. They're always going to be able to say that. You know, it's been, well, since November now. And, you know, the governor of Pennsylvania, which is one of the worst reactions in my state here, he used the phrase, this is an invisible enemy that could be anywhere. I think even Trump used phrases like that, that this, you know, creating this specter of terror. And yet the flu has killed more than 10,000 already this year, and no one's talking about it. The swine flu in 2009 killed 600,000. There were 11,000 cases in Pennsylvania in 2009, but there were no – people don't even remember. Zika, the only reason people are talking about Zika is because of this. And so this is – you know, this is the problem. If you cut it down to just people who – are dying solely from this virus with nothing else, it's a tiny number of people, tiny percentage of people. But whenever you say that, the regime can simply say, and there's definitely partisan warfare here. The Democrats try to make it as bad as possible. They could simply say, oh, well, you know, they're not being tested. You could all be carriers, you know, which is a, you know, TV trope. So this is just a scare tactic. By now, there should be this mass panic. And we're talking about really a few thousand cases, with a few exceptions, of course. And, you know, it's nothing compared to what other viral infections have been like just over the last decade.
Well, we've actually got some experts which are questioning the coronavirus panic here. The first one is Dr. Sucharit Bhakdi. He's a specialist in microbiology. He was a professor at the Johann Gutenberg University in Mainz and head of the Institute for Medical Microbiology and Hygiene, and one of the most cited research scientists in German history. He has this to say: we are afraid that 1 million infections with the new virus will lead to 30 deaths per day over the next 100 days. But we do not realize that 20, 30, 40 or 100 patients positive for normal coronaviruses are already dying every day. The government's anti-COVID-19 measures are grotesque, absurd and very dangerous. the life expectancy of millions is being shortened. The horrifying impact on the world economy threatens the existence of countless people. The consequences on medical care are profound. Already, services to patients in need are reduced, operations cancelled, practices empty, hospital personnel dwindling. All this will impact profoundly on our whole society. All these measures are leading to self-destruction and collective suicide based on nothing but a spook. And they're already stopping operations. They had it on the news today about bowel cancer, and people with bowel cancer can't get their operations, which means that they themselves, I mean, that could be fatal for themselves if they're at a stage where that's going to increase and they've been waiting for a long time. But at the same time, I mean, in Italy, 10% of the hospital staff have all become infected with COVID-19. So, I mean, even if they weren't to concentrate on it, they're still going to catch it themselves and not have enough hospital staff. What do you think of this quote that Dr. Bhakdi is making here, Matt?
Well, I agree with him. You know, this overreaction is absolutely, I mean, the Western economies can't handle this. They were on the verge of depression to begin with, as I've been talking about for a long time. And now you force firms to not function. You terrify people. You keep them from buying. You essentially strangle the economy and then pump money artificially into the stock market. And it just so happens, of course, now that they're very low, prices are very low, so the oligarchy can now buy them up. The damage that's been done from this overreaction is far worse than what's actually going on. And the press is absurd here. They're talking about millions. They're talking almost like, you know, science fiction zombification kind of numbers. You know, like the invisible enemy kind of thing, trying to terrify people, and people are panicking. That's far more damaging. That's really what this guy's saying. That's far more damaging than the actual virus.
Well, at least the press have found something different to Donald Trump to talk about. And the UN yesterday was demanding billions from the developed countries to pay for all the undeveloped countries to go through all the same aspects of the quarantine that we are, asking us to bail them out. I mean, it's going to cost us a fortune to bail out our own recession. I've got another quote here from someone called Michael T. Osterholm. He's the Regents Professor and Director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota. He says, consider the effect of shutting down offices, schools, transportation systems, restaurants, hotel stores, theatres, concert halls, sporting events and other venues indefinitely, and leaving all of their workers unemployed and on the public dole. The likely result would be not just a depression, but a complete economic breakdown, with countless permanently lost jobs long before a vaccine is ready or natural immunity takes hold. The best alternative will probably entail letting those at low risk for serious disease continue to work, keep business and manufacturing operating and run society, while at the same time advising higher risk individuals to protect themselves through physical distancing and ramping up our healthcare capacity as aggressively as possible. With this battle plan, we could gradually build up immunity without destroying the financial structure on which our lives are based. And this is the same idea that Max Musson was talking about to me on Area Britannia earlier this week. Matt, what do you make of what Michael Osterholm has to say here, his solution?
Well, when you have virologists and biologists talking like this, even though it's in their interest to exaggerate it, you know this is a serious matter. Time magazine has the headline, Overreaction is the Right Reaction. And then the Atlantic magazine has the headline, There's No Shame in Overreacting to Coronavirus. You know, an overreaction is irrational by definition. And the numbers, they're preaching this doom. They're even using words like apocalypse. All of a sudden, these atheists are talking about apocalypse with no evidence, completely irresponsibly. And this guy... And this guy here is talking about not just depression, but breakdown. That's a very real possibility. And the only reason, you know, my problem with the notion that this is some, you know, pre-planned conspiracy is that there's a lot of billionaires who are going broke. There's a lot of these guys who are losing businesses and maybe just under billionaires. A lot of rich guys are in trouble. You know, a lot of chains are in trouble. So you know, I'm kind of agnostic as far as that's concerned, but you know, even many of the elites are struggling here.
Oh, it seems to be the elites that are catching it, doesn't it? Harvey Weinstein, Prince Charles, Justin Trudeau's wife, Idris Elba, Tom Hanks. I mean, it really does seem to go for these celebrities. Well, finally,
it's a silver lining, you know.
Yeah. Well, finally, we've got an article here from the Patriot News from Pennsylvania, entitled "Governor Tom Wolf has no authority to close private businesses." But does Wolf have the authority to order the closure of private businesses, whether essential or non-essential? In short, no. The governor cites as his authority the Emergency Management Services Code, 35 PACS 7101, the emergency code, but that law does not apply to the coronavirus or COVID-19. The emergency code pertains to disasters. It defines them as man-made, such as industrial accidents and oil spills, natural, such as hurricanes and tornadoes, or war-caused. Disease appears nowhere in the definition. There is a law on preventing the spread of disease, the Disease Prevention and Control Law, but that law does not authorize the governor to do what he has done. Further, the code does not confer power upon the governor to close businesses, even if we stretch the definition of disaster beyond its breaking point to include disease. So what we've got here is they're actually just going ahead and doing things regardless of the laws and taking to themselves powers that they shouldn't have. What do you make of this bit, Matt?
Well, I included it, of course, because this is, you know, my own state and this is being discussed right now. One of the things that really bothered me when the governor or, you know, other governors ordered these shutdowns is that no one asked, do they have a right to do this? Everyone just assumed that there's some vague emergency powers that governments kind of have and that they could do as they please. That's simply not the case. Even at the federal level, I've been through all the federal laws in this regard. And even if you could find something about, you know, some kind of mass infection, the numbers aren't high enough to justify it. The federal laws, the state simply doesn't have this kind of power. And what bothers me is that no one has questioned it. Now, several cities or small towns, including where I used to live in Chambersburg, the mayor has refused to implement it. And he's leaving it up to businesses. And the mayor has said that, you know, this essential versus non-essential, that's not in any law. That's simply concocted. And so mayors are worried about, you know, the Chamber of Commerce going broke. And it's true. I mean, these governments do not, at least in America, they don't have the authority to shut this stuff down, especially when you're only talking about a few hundred people dying. So the legal aspects of this are huge. And there's quite a bit of, I think, being published now on RT and a few other places that people just assume governments have this totalitarian authority because, well, you know, everyone's scared. And that's one of the biggest problems here. But the I'm hoping it's more than just Chambersburg that's refusing to implement. Now, I'm sure this is the case in other states too, that they're kind of inventing things and everyone's just assuming that the governments just have this power and no one's questioning it, and they simply don't, especially given the low numbers. That's what's bothering me.
Well, funnily enough, I think Sweden has actually refused to have a lockdown. And we do have a Civil Contingencies Act in Britain, which basically enables the Prime Minister to do whatever he likes. And there's been no mention of that. And I think what they're doing is saying, well, we're on a war footing. They keep mentioning war, don't they? We're on a war footing. We're on a war with this virus. And I guess if there's been a declaration of war, then maybe that allows them to override some of the legal framework, I don't know. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Lampshade. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.